Enrolled Agent Study Guide Audiobook. Welcome to your audio study guide for the Enrolled Agent Exam. This guide covers a wide range of topics, starting with preliminary taxpayer work, engagement setup, and filing status rules. We will then move into income and assets, including earned and unearned income, basis rules, and asset dispositions. Next, we'll cover deductions and credits, such as adjustments to income, itemized deductions, various tax credits, and the qualified business income deduction. The guide will also walk you through tax computation, estimated taxes, and penalty provisions. We will explore advising taxpayers on retirement, education, and life events before diving into specialized returns like estate, gift, and foreign information returns. From there, we shift to business topics, including entity selection, partnerships, S-corps, and C-corps. We'll cover business tax preparation in detail, from gross receipts and depreciation to payroll and net operating losses. Finally, we will cover specialized business returns, practice and procedures under Circular 230, representation before the IRS, and the compliance process for filing returns. Let's begin. Topic: Preliminary Work and Taxpayer Data Question 1. When gathering preliminary data for a new individual tax client, which of the following documents is least likely to be required for the preparer to conduct a thorough review of the taxpayer's prior year situation? Option A, a copy of the previous year's federal and state tax returns. Option B, the client's Social Security card and driver's license. Option C, the client's high school diploma. Option D, forms W-2 from all employers for the previous year. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. While a tax preparer must verify a client's identity and review their prior tax history and income documents, a high school diploma is not relevant to tax preparation. Option A, the prior year's returns, is crucial for understanding the taxpayer's financial history and checking for carryover items. Option B, identity documents, are necessary for identity verification and e-filing requirements. And option D, prior year forms W-2, helps confirm income reported on the previous return and provides a baseline for the current year. Question 2. A taxpayer informs you that they own a foreign bank account, but they are unsure of the reporting requirements. As a preparer, your immediate next step should be to do what? Option A, advise the client to close the account immediately to avoid penalties. Option B, ignore the information as it does not relate to domestic income. Option C, ask clarifying questions to determine the highest balance of the account during the year and the client's filing history. Option D, file the current year return without any foreign account information and address the issue later. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. A preparer has a duty of due diligence, and upon learning of a potential filing requirement, the correct action is to gather more facts. Asking about the account's high balance and the client's history with foreign reporting will determine if FBR or Form 8938 filings are necessary. Advising closure is premature, and ignoring the information would be a violation of the preparer's due diligence responsibilities. Question 3. During an initial client interview, a taxpayer mentions they received a notice from the IRS regarding a prior year, but they threw it away. What is the most appropriate action for the tax professional to take? Option A, tell the client it is not a problem and that old notices are usually unimportant. Option B, advise the client to call the IRS main hotline to ask for a copy. Option C, obtain a signed Form 2848, Power of Attorney, from the client to contact the IRS on their behalf and access their records. Option D, prepare the current year return and assume the prior year issue is resolved. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The most effective and professional way to handle an unresolved IRS notice is to get authorization to represent the client. A Form 2848 allows the practitioner to speak directly with the IRS, view transcripts, and understand the nature of the notice and the steps needed for resolution. Telling the client it's unimportant is negligent, And while the client could call the IRS, it is far more efficient for an authorized professional to do so. Topic: engagement. Setup, PTIN, prior year review. Question 4. A tax preparer who is compensated for preparing or assisting in the preparation of all or substantially all of a U.S. federal tax return must have what? Option A, Juris Doctor degree. Option B, a valid preparer tax identification number, or PTIN. Option C, an active certified public accountant license. Option D, an office located in the United States. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The IRS requires any individual who prepares or assists in preparing federal tax returns for compensation to have a valid PTIN, which must be renewed annually. While many preparers are CPAs, attorneys, or enrolled agents, these credentials are not a universal requirement for all paid preparers, unlike the PTIN. Question 5. When conducting a prior year review for a new client, you notice they claimed the American Opportunity Tax Credit for their child, who was a college junior. For the current year, the child is a senior. What should be your primary consideration regarding this credit for the current year return? Option A, the credit is not available because the student is now a senior. Option B, the credit can only be claimed for a maximum of 2 years per student. Option C, you must verify if the credit has already been claimed for 4 prior tax years for this student. Option D, the credit is fully refundable regardless of how many years it has been claimed. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The American Opportunity Tax Credit is available for only the first 4 years of post-secondary education. Since the student was a junior last year, it is critical to confirm how many years the AOTC has been claimed to ensure they have not exhausted their eligibility. Verifying the number of prior claims is the essential due diligence step. Question 6. An engagement letter between a tax preparer and a client serves to do what? Option A, guarantee the client will receive a refund. Option B, fulfill the IRS requirement for client identity verification. Option C, legally bind the preparer to represent the client in tax court. Option D, define the scope of services, responsibilities of both parties, and the fee structure. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. An engagement letter is a contract that outlines the professional relationship. Its primary purpose is to prevent misunderstandings by clearly stating what services the preparer will provide, what the client is responsible for providing, and how the fees will be calculated. It does not guarantee a refund, which is unethical, nor does it replace other professional or legal requirements. Question 7. During a review of a new client's prior year return prepared by someone else, you discover a significant deduction was claimed for which the client has no records. The deduction resulted in a large refund. What is your ethical obligation under Circular 230, Option A? You must immediately report the previous preparer to the IRS Office of Professional Responsibility, Option B. You must advise the client of the error and the potential consequences of not correcting it, Option C. You must correct the error by filing an amended return for the client without their consent. Option D. You must ignore the error to protect your client's confidentiality. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Circular 230, Section 10,021, states that a practitioner who knows of an error on a client's tax return must advise the client promptly of the noncompliance, error, or omission and the consequences. The practitioner is not required to report the previous preparer and cannot file an amended return without the client's permission. The decision to amend rests with the client, but the practitioner's duty is to inform them. Topic: filing status, due dates, and extensions. Question 8. Mark and Wendy were married on December 31, 2024 for the 2024 tax year. What filing status are they eligible to use? Option A, single only. Option B, married filing separately only. Option C, married filing jointly or married filing separately. Option D, head of household. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. A taxpayer's marital status is determined on the last day of the tax year, December 31st. Since Mark and Wendy were married on that date, the IRS considers them married for the entire year. Therefore, they can choose to file as married filing jointly or married filing separately. They are no longer eligible to file as single, and neither would qualify for head of household. Question 9. An individual taxpayer who is not traveling abroad needs more time to file their Form 1040. What is the latest possible date they can file their return if they submit a timely extension? Option A, July 15th. Option B, September 15th. Option C, October 15th. Option D, December 31st. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. A timely filed Form 4868 grants an automatic 6-month extension to file. The normal due date for a Form 1040 is April 15th, so a 6-month extension results in a new due date of October 15th. This is an extension to file, not an extension to pay, and any tax due must still be paid by April 15 to avoid penalties and interest. Question 10. A taxpayer qualifies for head of household filing status. To qualify, the taxpayer must have paid more than half the cost of keeping up a home for the year, be considered unmarried for the tax year, and what other condition must be met? Option A. The taxpayer must have at least 2 qualifying children. Option B. A qualifying person must have lived with the taxpayer in the home for more than half the year, except for temporary absences. Option C. The taxpayer's adjusted gross income must be below a certain threshold. Option D. The taxpayer must be over the age of 25. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The 3 primary tests for head of household status are being considered unmarried, paying more than half the cost of keeping up the home, and having a qualifying person live with the taxpayer for more than half the year. A qualifying person can be a qualifying child or a qualifying relative. The number of children, AGI limits, and age are not part of the primary test for the filing status itself. Question 11. A U.S. citizen is living and working in France. What is the original unextended due date for filing their U.S. individual income tax return? Option A, April 15th. Option B, June 15th. Option C, October 15th. Option D, December 15th. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. U.S. citizens and resident aliens who are living and working outside the U.S., and Puerto Rico on the regular due date of their return receive an automatic 2-month extension to file. This moves their initial due date from April 15th to June 15th. This also provides an extension to pay any tax due. If they need more time, they can file Form 4868 to request an extension to October 15th. Topic: Identity Verification, ACA and Foreign Asset Checks. Question 12. A new client provides a driver's license and a social security card for identity verification. The name on the driver's license is slightly different from the name on the social security card due to a recent marriage. To ensure the tax return is accepted by the IRS e-file system, the preparer should use what name? Option A. The name exactly as it appears on the driver's license. Option B. The name exactly as it appears on the social security card. Option C. A hyphenated version of both last names. Option D, the name the client prefers to be called. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The IRS e-file system matches taxpayer information, specifically the name and social security number, against the Social Security Administration's database. A mismatch will cause the return to be rejected. Therefore, the name used on the tax return must exactly match the name on the Social Security card. The client should be advised to update their name with the SSA to avoid future issues. Question 13. Under the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, a taxpayer who obtains health insurance through the marketplace may be eligible for the premium tax credit. This credit is what? Option A, fully refundable, and can be paid in advance to the insurance company. Option B. a non-refundable credit available only to taxpayers who do not itemize, option C, available only to taxpayers who are self-employed, option D, calculated based on the taxpayer's property tax payments. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The premium tax credit is a refundable credit designed to help eligible individuals and families afford health insurance purchased through the health insurance marketplace. Taxpayers can choose to have the credit paid directly to their insurance company in advance to lower their monthly premium payments, or they can claim the full credit when they file their tax return. Question 14. A U.S. citizen has a financial interest in a foreign bank account, and the aggregate value of all their foreign financial accounts exceeded $10,000 at any time during the calendar year. What form must they file? Option A, Form 8938, Statement of Specified Foreign Financial Assets. Option B, Form 1040, Schedule B, Interest and Ordinary Dividends. Option C, FinCEN Form 114, Report of Foreign Bank and Financial Accounts, also known as FBAR. Option D, Form 1166, Foreign Tax Credit. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The requirement to file an FBR is triggered when a U.S. person has a financial interest in or signature authority over foreign financial accounts, and the aggregate value of those accounts exceeds $10,000 at any point during the year. This report is filed electronically with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, a bureau of the Treasury Department, not with the IRS. Form 8938 has different reporting thresholds and is filed with the tax return. Topic: Income and Assets. Question 15. Which of the following is generally considered taxable income to the recipient? Option A, a cash gift received from a parent. Option B, child support payments received from a former spouse. Option C, gambling winnings. Option D, a direct inheritance from a deceased relative's estate. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Gambling winnings are fully taxable and must be reported as other income on Form 1040. Schedule 1, gifts, inheritances, and child support payments are generally not considered taxable income to the person who receives them. Any gift tax, if applicable, is typically the responsibility of the person who gives the gift, not the recipient. Question 16. A taxpayer sells stock for $5,000. Their original purchase price, or basis, for the stock was $3,000. They also incurred a $50 commission fee when they sold the stock. What is the taxpayer's recognized gain on this sale? Option A, $5,000. Option B, $2,000. Option C, $1,950. Option D, $2,050. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The gain or loss on a sale is calculated as the amount realized minus the adjusted basis. The amount realized is the sale price less any selling expenses, so $5,000 minus $50 equals $4,950. The adjusted basis is the original cost of $3,000. Therefore, the recognized gain is $4,950 minus $3,000, which equals $1,950. Question 17. A taxpayer receives a Form 1099 MISC with $1,000 reported in Box 3, Other Income, for a prize they won from a radio contest. How should this income be reported on their Form 1040? Option A, it is not taxable and does not need to be reported. Option B, as wages on line 1A of Form 1040. Option C, on Schedule C, as income from a business. Option D, on Schedule 1, as other income. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. Prizes and awards are considered taxable income. Income reported in Box 3 of Form 1099 MISC is generally reported on the other income line of Schedule 1, Form 1040. It is not considered wages, and unless the taxpayer is in the business of winning contests, it is not Schedule C income. Question 18. A landlord receives $2,400 for the first and last month's rent from a new tenant on a one-year lease that begins on December 1st, 2024. How much rental income must the landlord recognize in 2024? Option A, $200, representing 1 month's rent. Option B, $1,200, representing the first month's rent. Option C, $2,400, representing the full amount received. Option D, $0, because the last month's rent applies to 2025. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. For tax purposes, advance rent is any amount you receive before the period that it covers. Regardless of the period covered or the method of accounting used, you must include advance rent in your rental income in the year you receive it. Therefore, the landlord must report the entire $2,400 as income in 2024. Question 19. A taxpayer receives a Form 1099 DIV showing $500 in ordinary dividends and $200 in qualified dividends. How are the qualified dividends typically taxed? Option A, they are not taxed. Option B, they are taxed at the taxpayer's ordinary income tax rate. Option C, they are taxed at the lower long-term capital gains tax rates. Option D, they are subject to self-employment tax. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Qualified dividends are a portion of ordinary dividends that meet certain requirements. The benefit of qualified dividends is that they are taxed at the more favorable long-term capital gains tax rates, which are 0%, 15%, or 20%, depending on the taxpayer's taxable income. This is in contrast to ordinary dividends, which are taxed at the taxpayer's regular marginal income tax rate. Question 20. In January 2025, a taxpayer receives a Form 1099 INT for interest earned in 2024 from a bank savings account. The taxpayer had already filed their 2024 return in early January before receiving the form. What should the taxpayer do? Option A, nothing, since the amount is likely small. Option B, file an amended tax return, Form 1040-2X, to report the interest income. Option C, report the interest on their 2025 tax return. Option D, send a letter to the IRS explaining the situation. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Taxpayers are required to report all income received in a given year, regardless of whether they receive a tax form for it. Since the interest was earned in 2024, it must be reported on the 2024 tax return. The proper procedure to correct a previously filed return is to file Form 1040-X, amended U.S. Individual Income Tax Return. Ignoring the income could lead to an IRS notice with penalties and interest. Topic: Basis and Holding Period Rules. Question 21. The basis of property you buy is usually its cost. Which of the following can be included in the cost basis of a purchased home? Option A, the cost of fire insurance premiums paid. Option B, the cost of utilities for the first month of ownership. Option C, settlement fees and closing costs, such as abstract fees and recording fees. Option D, the cost of repainting the living room a new color after moving in. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The cost basis of a property includes not only the purchase price, but also certain settlement fees and closing costs that are not deducted elsewhere. Examples include abstract fees, charges for installing utility services, legal fees, recording fees, surveys and transfer taxes, insurance premiums, utility costs, and cosmetic repairs like painting are considered current expenses or personal preferences and are not added to the basis of the property. Question 22. A taxpayer inherits stock from their grandmother. The grandmother's adjusted basis in the stock was $10,000. The fair market value of the stock on the date of her death was $50,000. What is the taxpayer's basis in the inherited stock? Option A, $10,000. Option B, $50,000. Option C, $40,000. Option D, $0. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The basis of property inherited from a decedent is generally the fair market value of the property on the date of the decedent's death. This is often referred to as a stepped-up basis, because the basis is typically stepped up to its current market value. The heir's basis is not the decedent's original basis, so the $10,000 is irrelevant. Question 23. On June 1, 2023, a taxpayer receives shares of stock as a gift from their uncle. The uncle's adjusted basis was $2,000, and the fair market value on the date of the gift was $5,000. The taxpayer sells the stock on June 1, 2024 for $7,000. What is the taxpayer's holding period and gain? Option A, short-term gain of $5,000. Option B, long-term gain of $5,000. Option C, short-term gain of $2,000. Option D, long-term gain of $2,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. When gifted property is sold at a gain, the recipient's basis is the same as the donor's adjusted basis, which is $2,000. The gain is the sale price of $7,000 minus the $2,000 basis, which is $5,000. For holding period, when you receive a gift, you also tack on the donor's holding period. Since the uncle held the stock for some time and the taxpayer held it for a year, the total holding period is more than 1 year, making the gain long-term. Question 24. A taxpayer buys a new machine for their business for $20,000. In the first year, they properly claim $4,000 in depreciation deductions. What is the adjusted basis of the machine at the start of the second year? Option A, $20,000. Option B, $16,000. Option C, $4,000. Option D, $24,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The adjusted basis of an asset is its original cost or other basis, minus any decreases, plus any increases. Depreciation is a decrease to basis, therefore the adjusted basis is the original cost of $20,000 minus the $4,000 of depreciation taken, which equals $16,000. This adjusted basis will be used to calculate depreciation in future years and to determine gain or loss upon sale. Topic: sales, exchanges, and other asset dispositions. Question 25. A taxpayer sells their main home, which they have owned and lived in for the past 10 years, for a gain of $300,000. The taxpayer is single. How much of the gain can the taxpayer exclude from their income? Option A, $0. Option B, $500,000. Option C, $300,000. Option D, $250,000. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. A taxpayer may be able to exclude from income all or part of the gain from the sale of their main home. To qualify, they must meet the ownership and use tests, meaning they owned and lived in the property as their main home for at least 2 of the 5 years before the sale. A single taxpayer can exclude up to $250,000 of gain. Since the gain was $300,000, the taxpayer can exclude $250,000 and must recognize the remaining $50,000 as a capital gain. Question 26. Which of the following transactions qualifies as a like-kind exchange under Section 131? Option A, an exchange of shares of stock in Company A for shares of stock in Company B. Option B, an exchange of a personal automobile for a new one. Option C, an exchange of a rental apartment building for a piece of undeveloped land held for investment. Option D, an exchange of inventory from one business for inventory for another business. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Section 1031 like-kind exchange treatment applies only to real property held for use in a trade or business or for investment, stocks, bonds, inventory, and personal use assets like a personal car do not qualify for tax-deferred treatment under Section 131. An apartment building and undeveloped land are both considered real property, and if both are held for business or investment purposes, their exchange can qualify. Question 27. A taxpayer has a capital loss carryover of $5,000 from the previous year. In the current year, they have a net capital gain of $1,000. How much of the capital loss carryover can they deduct against other income, assuming they are not married filing separately? Option A, $5,000. Option B, $1,000. Option C, $4,000. Option D, $3,000. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. A taxpayer can use a capital loss carryover to offset capital gains in the current year. Here, the $5,000 loss carryover first offsets the $1,000 capital gain, leaving a net capital loss of $4,000. A taxpayer can then deduct up to $3,000 of net capital losses against other types of income, such as wages. The remaining loss, $4,000 minus the $3,000 used, of $1,000, will be carried over to the next year. Question 28. A taxpayer's business property is completely destroyed in a fire. The property had an adjusted basis of $100,000. The taxpayer receives an insurance payment of $120,000. If the taxpayer does not reinvest the proceeds in similar property, what is the result of this involuntary conversion? Option A, a recognized gain of $20,000. Option B, a deductible loss of $100,000. Option C, no gain or loss is recognized. Option D, a recognized gain of $120,000. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. An involuntary conversion occurs when property is destroyed, stolen, condemned, or disposed of under the threat of condemnation. The tax treatment is similar to a sale. The gain is the amount realized, $120,000 insurance payment, minus the adjusted basis, $100,000, resulting in a $20,000 gain. The taxpayer can elect to defer this gain if they reinvest the proceeds in qualified replacement property within a specific period. But if they do not, the gain must be recognized in the year it is realized. Topic: deductions and credits. Question 29. A single taxpayer, who is not a dependent of another taxpayer, paid $3,000 in interest on a qualified student loan. Their modified adjusted gross income is $50,000. What is the maximum amount of student loan interest they can deduct as an adjustment to income? Option A, $3,000. Option B, $2,500. Option C, $500. Option D, $0, because their income is too high. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The student loan interest deduction is an above-the-line deduction, meaning you do not have to itemize to claim it. The maximum deduction is the amount of interest you paid during the year, or $2,500, whichever is less. Since the taxpayer paid $3,000, their deduction is limited to the maximum of $2,500. The deduction is subject to income phase-outs, but a magi of $50,000 is well below the threshold for a single filer. Question 30. A taxpayer is an active participant in their employer's retirement plan. Their modified AGI is above the phase-out range for deducting contributions to a traditional IRA. What is the tax treatment of a $6,000 contribution they make to a traditional IRA? Option A, the entire contribution is deductible. Option B, the contribution is not allowed. Option C, the contribution is allowed, but no portion of it is deductible. Option D, the contribution is subject to a 10% penalty. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. If a taxpayer is an active participant in an employer-sponsored retirement plan, their ability to deduct contributions to a traditional IRA is phased out based on their modified adjusted gross income. If their income is above the phase-out range, the contribution is still permitted up to the annual limit, but it is considered a non-deductible contribution. The taxpayer should file Form 8606 to track the non-deductible basis to avoid being taxed on it again upon withdrawal. Question 31. A sole proprietor has net earnings from self-employment of $100,000. What is the deductible portion of their self-employment tax? Option A, 100% of the self-employment tax paid. Option B, 50% of the self-employment tax paid. Option C, 7,065% of the self-employment tax paid, option D, $0, because self-employment tax is not deductible. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. A self-employed individual pays both the employee and employer portions of Social Security and Medicare taxes, which is known as the self-employment tax, to equalize the treatment with employees who do not pay tax on the employer's share of FICA taxes. Self-employed individuals can deduct one half of their self-employment tax as an adjustment to income. This deduction is claimed on Schedule 1 of Form 1040. Question 32. A qualified kindergarten teacher spends $400 of their own money on classroom supplies during the year. What is the maximum educator expense deduction they can take? Option A, $400. Option B, $250. Option C, $300. Option D, $0. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Eligible educators can deduct up to $300 for unreimbursed business expenses. This includes books, supplies, and other materials used in the classroom. If two eligible educators are married and file a joint return, they can deduct up to $600, but not more than $300 each. Since the teacher spent $400, their deduction is limited to the $300 maximum. Question 33. A taxpayer contributes the maximum allowable amount to their health savings account, or HSA. How is this contribution treated for tax purposes? Option A. It is an itemized deduction on Schedule A, subject to a 7,005% AGI limit. Option B. It is a non-refundable tax credit. Option C. It is an adjustment to income on Schedule 1, Form 1040. Option D. It is not deductible, but withdrawals are tax-free. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Contributions made to an HSA are deductible as an adjustment to income, often called an above-the-line deduction. This means the taxpayer does not need to itemize to get the tax benefit. The deduction is claimed on Form 8889 and carries to Schedule 1. This is a powerful tax advantage, as it reduces adjusted gross income. Question 34. A divorce was finalized on January 15, 2023. Under the terms of the decree, one former spouse is required to pay alimony to the other. How are these payments treated for federal income tax purposes? Option A. The payments are deductible by the payer and taxable income to the recipient. Option B. The payments are not deductible by the payer and are not taxable income to the recipient. Option C. The payments are deductible by the payer but are not taxable income to the recipient. Option D. The payments are not deductible by the payer but are taxable income to the recipient. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 changed the rules for alimony for any divorce or separation agreement executed after December 31, 2018. For these newer agreements, alimony payments are no longer deductible by the person who pays them, and they are not included in the taxable income of the person who receives them. The pre-2019 rules of deductibility includability no longer apply. Topic: Itemized versus standard deduction. Question 35. In which of the following situations is a taxpayer required to itemize their deductions rather than taking the standard deduction? Option A. The taxpayer is blind. Option B. The taxpayer is married and filing a separate return, and their spouse itemizes deductions. Option C. The taxpayer is self-employed. Option D. The taxpayer made large charitable contributions. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Generally, taxpayers can choose whether to itemize or take the standard deduction. However, there is a rule that if a married couple files separate returns and one spouse itemizes, the other spouse cannot take the standard deduction and must also itemize. Being blind entitles a taxpayer to a higher standard deduction, but does not force them to itemize. Being self-employed or making large charitable gifts may make itemizing beneficial, but it does not make it mandatory. Question 36. A 15-year-old student is claimed as a dependent on their parents' tax return. The student earned $2,000 from a part-time job and had no unearned income. What is the amount of the student's standard deduction on their own tax return? Option A, $0, because they are a dependent. Option B, $1,300, the base amount for 2024. Option C, $2,400, which is their earned income plus $400. Option D, the full standard deduction for a single individual. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The standard deduction for an individual who can be claimed as a dependent is limited. For 2024, it is the greater of $300, or their total earned income plus $400, but not more than the regular standard deduction for their filing status. In this case, the student's earned income of $2,000 plus $400 is $2,400. Since $2,400 is greater than $1,300, their standard deduction is $2,400. Question 37. A married couple filing a joint return paid $8,000 in state income taxes and $12,000 in local property taxes during the year. What is the maximum amount they can deduct for state and local taxes, or SALT, on their Schedule A, Option A, $20,000, Option B, $10,000, Option C, $8,000, Option D, $5,000? The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The deduction for state and local taxes, which includes income, sales, and property taxes, is capped at a total of $10,000 per household per year. This limit applies to single filers and married couples filing jointly. For married couples filing separately, the limit is $5,000 each. Even though the couple paid a total of $20,000 in state and local taxes, their deduction is limited to $10,000. Question 38. A taxpayer has an adjusted gross income, or AGI, of $60,000. They incurred $7,000 in qualified medical expenses. How much of these medical expenses can they include as an itemized deduction on Schedule A before any other limitations? Option A, $7,000. Option B, $2,500. Option C, $4,500. Option D, $1,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Taxpayers can deduct the amount of qualified medical expenses that exceeds 7,005% of their adjusted gross income. First, calculate the AGI threshold. 7,005% of $60,000 is $4,500. Next, subtract this threshold from the total medical expenses. $7,000 minus $4,500 equals $2,500. Therefore, the taxpayer can deduct $2,500 of their medical expenses. Question 39. A taxpayer has two mortgages, a $400,000 mortgage on their main home and a $200,000 mortgage on a vacation home. Both loans were taken out after 2017 to buy the homes. On what amount of total mortgage debt can they deduct the interest? Option A, $600,000. Option B, $400,000. Option C, $750,000. Option D, $1,000. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. For mortgages taken out after December 15, 2017, taxpayers can deduct the interest on up to $750,000 of qualified residence loan debt. However, the debt limit applies to the combined total of loans on a main home and a second home. Since the taxpayer's total debt is $400,000 plus $200,000, which equals $600,000, this is below the $750,000 limit. Therefore, they can deduct the interest on the full $600,000 of debt. Question 40. A taxpayer with an AGI of $100,000 donates $60,000 in cash to a public charity. What is the maximum charitable contribution deduction they can take in the current year? Option A, $30,000. Option B, $50,000. Option C, $60,000. Option D, $100,000. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The deduction for cash contributions to most public charities is limited to 60% of the taxpayer's adjusted gross income. In this case, 60% of the taxpayer's $100,000 AGI is $60,000. Since their cash donation was $60,000, they can deduct the full amount. If the donation had exceeded the 60% limit, the excess could be carried forward for up to 5 years. Topic: Education, Child and Other Refundable, Non-Refundable Credits. Question 41. For the 2024 tax year, the child tax credit is worth up to $2,000 per qualifying child. What portion of this credit is potentially refundable as the additional child tax credit? Option A, $0. Option B, up to $1,700. Option C, up to $1,000. Option D, the full $2,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The child tax credit is a non-refundable credit, meaning it can reduce a taxpayer's liability to zero, but they don't get any of it back as a refund beyond that. However, a portion of the credit is refundable through the additional child tax credit for 2024. The refundable portion is limited to $1,700 per qualifying child. This means that even if a taxpayer has no tax liability, they may still receive up to $1,700 back as a refund. Question 42. A student is in their fifth year of college, pursuing an undergraduate degree. Which education credit are they most likely eligible for, assuming all other requirements are met? Option A, the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Option B, the Lifetime Learning Credit. Option C, both the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit. Option D, neither credit is available after the fourth year of college. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The American Opportunity Tax Credit is only available for the first 4 years of post-secondary education. Since the student is in their fifth year, they are no longer eligible for the AOTC. However, the Lifetime Learning Credit does not have a 4-year limit. It can be claimed for undergraduate, graduate, and professional degree courses, including courses taken to acquire job skills. Therefore, the student would be eligible for the Lifetime Learning Credit. Question 43. To claim the Child and Dependent Care Credit, a taxpayer must have earned income, and the care expenses must be for a qualifying person. Which of the following is a primary purpose of the expenses to qualify for the credit? Option A, to pay for the child's private school tuition. Option B, to allow the taxpayer and their spouse to work or look for work. Option C, to pay for the child's summer sports camp. Option D, to pay a relative for watching the child while the parents go on vacation. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The fundamental purpose of the Child and Dependent Care Credit is to help taxpayers pay for the care of a qualifying person so that they can work or actively look for work. Expenses for private school tuition are not considered care expenses. Overnight camps do not qualify. And expenses for babysitting while parents are on vacation are not work-related. The care must be necessary to enable the taxpayer's employment. Question 44. A 30-year-old single individual with no qualifying children earned $15,000 from their job. They meet all other requirements. Are they potentially eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC, option A? No, the EITC is only for taxpayers with qualifying children. Option B. Yes, they may be eligible for the EITC for taxpayers with no qualifying children. Option C. No, their income of $15,000 is too high. Option D. No, they must be at least 55 years old to qualify without a child. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. While the EITC provides a larger credit for taxpayers with children, there is also a smaller credit available for those who have no qualifying children. To be eligible, the taxpayer must be between the ages of 25 and 64 at the end of the year, live in the U.S. for more than half the year, and not be the dependent of another person. Their income of $15,000 is within the eligible range for a single person with no children. Question 45. The Retirement Savings Contributions Credit, also known as the Savers Credit, is designed to help which group of taxpayers? Option A, high-income taxpayers who max out their 401k contributions. Option B, self-employed taxpayers who contribute to a SEP IRA. Option C, low to moderate income taxpayers who save for retirement. Option D, taxpayers who are retired and receiving distributions. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The Savers Credit is a non-refundable credit intended to encourage low to moderate income taxpayers to save for retirement. The credit is available to taxpayers who contribute to an IRA or an employer-sponsored retirement plan. The amount of the credit is a percentage of the contribution, and that percentage decreases as the taxpayer's adjusted gross income increases. High-income taxpayers are not eligible for this credit. Topic: Qualified Business Income, QBI. Deduction Question 46. A single taxpayer owns a sole proprietorship that is a qualified trade or business. Their taxable income before the QBI deduction is $100,000, and their qualified business income is $80,000. What is their potential QBI deduction before any limitations? Option A, $20,000. Option B, $16,000. Option C, $80,000. Option D, $100,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The qualified business income deduction is generally 20% of a taxpayer's qualified business income from a pass-through entity. In this case, 20% of the $80,000 of QBI is $16,000. There is also an overall limitation based on 20% of taxable income before the deduction, which would be $20,000. The deduction is the lesser of these two amounts, so it is $16,000. Since the taxpayer's income is below the statutory threshold, the W-2 wage and UBIA limitations do not apply. Question 47. Which of the following is considered a specified service trade or business, or SSTB, for purposes of the QBI deduction? Option A, a plumbing company. Option B, a restaurant. Option C, a law firm. Option D, a retail store. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. An SSTB is a trade or business involving the performance of services in fields such as health, law, accounting, actuarial science, performing arts, consulting, athletics, financial services, or any trade or business where the principal asset is the reputation or skill of one or more of its employees. A law firm falls directly into this definition. Plumbing, restaurants, and retail are generally not considered SSTBs, and thus are not subject to the same income limitations for the QBI deduction. Question 48. A taxpayer's QBI deduction for a business is limited if their taxable income is above a certain threshold. The limitation is based on the greater of two amounts. One is 50% of the W-2 wages paid by the business. What is the other amount? Option A, 25% of the W-2 wages plus 2,005% of the unadjusted basis immediately after acquisition of all qualified property. Option B, 10% of the qualified business income. Option C, 5% of the net profit of the business. Option D, 50% of the unadjusted basis immediately after acquisition of all qualified property. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. For taxpayers with taxable income above the thresholds, the QBI deduction for a given business is limited to the lesser of 20% of the QBI from that business, or the greater of either 50% of the W-2 wages attributable to the business, or the sum of 25% of the W-2 wages plus 2,005% of the unadjusted basis immediately after acquisition, UBIA, of all qualified property. This complex limitation is designed to ensure the deduction is tied to businesses that create jobs or invest in tangible assets. Topic: Taxation and Payments. Key Principles and Framework. Question 49. The alternative minimum tax, or AMT, is best described as what? Option A, a tax system designed to replace the regular income tax for high-income individuals. Option B, a parallel tax system that ensures high-income taxpayers pay at least a minimum amount of tax by disallowing certain deductions and credits. Option C, a voluntary tax that taxpayers can choose to pay instead of regular income tax. Option D, a tax that applies only to income from investments. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The AMT is a separate tax calculation that runs parallel to the regular income tax. It was created to prevent high-income taxpayers from using numerous deductions, credits, and exclusions to pay little or no tax. Taxpayers must calculate their tax liability under both the regular system and the AMT system, and pay the higher of the two amounts. The AMT calculation starts with regular taxable income and adds back certain preference items, such as the deduction for state and local taxes. Question 50. A taxpayer is self-employed and has net earnings from self-employment of $50,000. What is the primary purpose of the self-employment tax? Option A, to pay for federal and state unemployment insurance. Option B, to pay Social Security and Medicare taxes for the self-employed individual. Option C, to fund the Small Business Administration. Option D, to serve as a prepayment of federal income tax. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The self-employment tax is the equivalent of the FICA taxes, Social Security and Medicare, that are withheld from an employee's paycheck. Since self-employed individuals are their own employers, they are responsible for paying both the employee and the employer portions of these taxes. The tax is calculated on Schedule SE and contributes to the individual's future Social Security and Medicare benefits. Question 51. The net investment income tax, or NIIT, is a 3.8% tax on the lesser of net investment income, or what? Option A, the taxpayer's total adjusted gross income. Option B, the taxpayer's total wages and salary. Option C, the modified adjusted gross income over a certain threshold. Option D, the taxpayer's total itemized deductions. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The NIIT applies to individuals, estates, and trusts that have net investment income and also have modified adjusted gross income, MAGI, exceeding certain thresholds. The thresholds are $250,000 for married filing jointly, $125,000 for married filing separately, and $200,000 for all other filers. The tax is 3.8% of the lesser of the net investment income, or the amount by which MAGI exceeds the applicable threshold. Question 52. A taxpayer calculates their total tax liability to be $10,000. They had $8,000 in federal income tax withheld from their paychecks throughout the year. What is the result on their tax return? Option A, they will receive a refund of $2,000. Option B, they have a tax due of $2,000. Option C, they have a tax due of $10,000. Option D, they will receive a refund of $8,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. A taxpayer's final refund or amount due is determined by comparing their total tax liability to the total payments they have made throughout the year. Payments include withholding and any estimated tax payments. In this case, the total tax is $10,000 and the total payments are $8,000. Since the tax is greater than the payments, the taxpayer has a balance due of the difference, which is $2,000. Topic: Estimated Tax and Withholding Rules. Question 53. A taxpayer expects to owe $5,000 in tax for the year after subtracting their withholding and credits. What are they generally required to do to avoid an underpayment penalty? Option A, pay the full $5,000 with their tax return by April 15th of the following year. Option B, increase their withholding at work to cover the amount, or make quarterly estimated tax payments. Option C, file for an extension, which also extends the time to pay. Option D, nothing, as the amount is below the $10,000 threshold for penalties. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The U.S. tax system is a pay-as-you-go system. Taxpayers are required to pay tax as they earn or receive income during the year. If a taxpayer expects to owe at least $1,000 in tax for the year, after withholding and credits, they must generally pay tax throughout the year via withholding or by making estimated tax payments. Simply waiting to pay with the return will likely result in an underpayment penalty. An extension to file is not an extension to pay. Question 54. The safe harbor rule for avoiding an underpayment penalty generally requires a taxpayer to pay, through withholding and estimated payments, the lesser of 90% of the tax for the current year, or what? Option A, 100% of the tax shown on the return for the immediately preceding tax year. Option B, 50% of the tax shown on the return for the immediately preceding tax year. Option C, 110% of the tax for the current year. Option D, 80% of the tax shown on the return for the immediately preceding tax year. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The primary safe harbor rule allows taxpayers to avoid a penalty if they pay the lesser of two amounts, 90% of the current year's tax liability or 100% of the prior year's tax liability. The prior year's return must have covered a full 12 months. For higher income taxpayers, AGI over $150,000, the second prong of the test is increased from 100% to 110% of the prior year's tax. Question 55. A taxpayer realizes in December that they have not had enough tax withheld for the year. What is the most effective way to make up for the shortfall and potentially avoid an underpayment penalty for all four quarters of the year? Option A, make a large estimated tax payment by January 15th of the next year. Option B, increase the withholding on their salary for the final pay periods of the year. Option C, pay the full amount due with the tax return in April. Option D, file Form 2210 and request a waiver of the penalty. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The IRS treats income tax withholding as if it were paid evenly throughout the year, regardless of when it was actually withheld. In contrast, estimated tax payments are credited for the quarter in which they are paid. Therefore, by increasing withholding late in the year, a taxpayer can have that amount spread evenly back across all four quarters, potentially eliminating a penalty for the earlier quarters. A large estimated payment in the fourth quarter would only apply to that quarter. Question 56. A taxpayer is a freelance writer and receives income irregularly throughout the year. What is the most suitable method for them to calculate their required estimated tax payments to match their income flow and avoid a penalty? Option A, the regular installment method, paying four equal payments. Option B, the annualized income installment method. Option C, paying 100% of the prior year's tax in the first quarter. Option D, paying the entire estimated tax amount with their tax return. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The annualized income installment method allows taxpayers who receive income unevenly to make estimated tax payments that correspond to when they actually receive the income. This can prevent them from being penalized for underpaying in early quarters when their income was low. They would calculate the tax due at the end of each payment period based on the income received to that point and make a payment to cover that liability. This is more complex than the regular method, but is ideal for those with fluctuating income. Topic. Penalties. Interest and safe harbor provisions. Question 57. A taxpayer files their tax return on July 1st when it was due on April 15th without having filed an extension. They owe $2,000 in taxes. What is the failure to file penalty for the first month, assuming no fraud? Option A, $100. Option B, $200. Option C, $60. Option D, $300. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The failure to file penalty is generally 5% of the unpaid tax for each month or part of a month that a return is late. The penalty is capped at 25% of the unpaid tax. In this case, the return is late for 3 months. April 15th to May 15th, May 15th to June 15th, June 15th to July 1st. However, the question asks for the first month's penalty, which is 5% of the $2,000 tax due, which equals $100. Note that if both the failure to file and failure to pay penalties apply, the failure to file penalty is reduced by the amount of the failure to pay penalty. Question 58. A taxpayer files their return on time but does not pay the $4,000 tax liability until 3 months after the due date. What is the failure to pay penalty for the 3 months? Option A, $20. Option B, $60. Option C, $200. Option D, $600. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The failure to pay penalty is 0.5%, one half of 1% of the unpaid taxes for each month or part of a month. The taxes remain unpaid. The penalty is capped at 25% of the unpaid tax. The calculation is 0.5% times the $4,000 unpaid tax, which equals $20 per month. For 3 months, the total penalty is 3 times $20, which equals $60. Question 59. A taxpayer may be able to have penalties abated or removed for what reason? Option A, they disagree with the tax law. Option B, they can show they acted with reasonable cause and not willful neglect. Option C, they received a large refund in the prior year. Option D, they are experiencing financial hardship and cannot pay their tax bill. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The IRS may abate penalties if the taxpayer can demonstrate that their failure to file or pay on time was due to reasonable cause and not willful neglect. Reasonable cause is based on all the facts and circumstances and can include events like a death in the family, serious illness, or the destruction of records in a fire or flood. Financial hardship may be a reason to get into a payment plan, but it is generally not a reason for penalty abatement on its own. Disagreeing with the law is never a valid reason. Question 60. The first-time penalty abatement, or FTA waiver, is an administrative relief offered by the IRS. To qualify, a taxpayer must meet several criteria, including having a clean compliance history for what period of time, option A, the past year, option B, the past 3 years, option C, the past 5 years, option D, the past 10 years. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. To qualify for the first-time penalty abatement, the taxpayer must have a history of good tax compliance. This means that for the 3 tax years preceding the year in which the penalty was assessed, the taxpayer filed all required returns, did not have an outstanding penalty, other than an estimated tax penalty, and paid or arranged to pay any tax due. They must also be current on all filing and payment obligations. Topic: Advising the individual taxpayer. Question 61. A 45-year-old taxpayer wants to start saving for retirement but is unsure which type of IRA to choose. Their income is moderate, and they expect to be in a higher tax bracket during retirement. Which type of IRA would likely be most advantageous for them? Option A, a traditional IRA, because the contributions are tax deductible. Option B, a Roth IRA, because qualified distributions in retirement are tax free. Option C, a SEP IRA, because it allows for the largest contributions. Option D, a simple IRA, because it is the easiest to set up. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The key factor here is the taxpayer's expectation of being in a higher tax bracket in retirement. A Roth IRA is funded with after-tax dollars, meaning there is no upfront tax deduction for contributions. However, the contributions and earnings grow tax-free, and qualified distributions during retirement are also tax-free. This is highly beneficial for someone who expects to be in a higher tax bracket later, as they pay tax now at their lower rate and avoid tax later at their higher rate. A traditional IRA provides a tax deduction now, but distributions are taxed in retirement, which would be at the higher rate. Question 62. A married couple is deciding whether to file as married filing jointly or married filing separately? In which situation would filing separately likely be a better tax strategy? Option A, when one spouse has very high medical expenses. Option B, when they want to claim the earned income tax credit. Option C, when they want to claim education credits. Option D, when they want to maximize their standard deduction. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Filing separately can sometimes be advantageous if one spouse has significant medical expenses. The medical expense deduction is limited to the amount that exceeds 7,005% of adjusted gross income. By filing separately, the spouse with the high medical bills will have a lower AGI on their individual return. This lower AGI threshold makes it easier to exceed the 7,005% floor and claim a larger deduction. For most other situations, including claiming most credits and getting a larger standard deduction, filing jointly is usually more beneficial. Question 63. A taxpayer is considering selling a stock for a large gain in December. What is a potential year-end tax strategy they could use to reduce the tax impact of this gain? Option A, gifting the stock to their child to sell. Option B, selling another investment at a loss before the end of the year, a strategy known as tax loss harvesting. Option C, donating the stock to charity instead of selling it. Option D, waiting to sell the stock until January of the next year. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Tax loss harvesting is a strategy where an investor sells securities at a loss to offset a capital gains tax liability. Capital losses can be used to offset capital gains, and up to $3,000 of excess losses can be deducted against ordinary income each year. By selling a losing investment in the same year as the winning one, the taxpayer can reduce or even eliminate the taxable gain. Waiting until January, option D, only defers the tax, it doesn't reduce it, and the other options have different tax consequences. Question 64. A taxpayer's child is turning 17 years old on December 30th of the tax year. What is the impact of this life event on the taxpayer's ability to claim the child tax credit for that child? Option A, there is no impact. The credit is still available. Option B, the taxpayer can claim half of the credit. Option C, the taxpayer can no longer claim the child tax credit for that child, but may be able to claim the credit for other dependents. Option D, the taxpayer must file for an extension to claim the credit. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. To be a qualifying child for the child tax credit, the child must be under the age of 17 at the end of the tax year. Since the child turns 17 before the end of the year, they no longer qualify for the $2,000 child tax credit. However, if the child meets the other dependency tests, the taxpayer may be able to claim the non-refundable $500 credit for other dependents instead. Topic: Specialized returns for individuals. Question 65. Form 1041 is used to report the income of which type of entity? Option A, a partnership. Option B, an S corporation. Option C, a domestic estate or trust. Option D, a C corporation. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Form 1041, U.S., income tax return for estates and trusts, is filed by the fiduciary, executor, administrator, or trustee of a domestic estate or trust. The form is used to report the income, deductions, gains, losses, and credits of the estate or trust, and any income that is either accumulated or distributed to the beneficiaries. Partnerships file form 1065, S corporations file form 1120S, and C corporations file form 1120. Question 66. A taxpayer gives a gift of $50,000 in cash to their adult child. What is the taxpayer's requirement regarding the federal gift tax, assuming they have made no other gifts during the year? Option A, no filing is required because the gift is to a family member. Option B, the taxpayer must file a gift tax return, Form 709, to report the gift. Option C, the child must report the $50,000 as taxable income. Option D, the taxpayer must pay gift tax on the entire $50,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. For 2024, the annual gift tax exclusion is $18,000 per recipient. This means a taxpayer can give up to $18,000 to any number of individuals without any gift tax implications. Since the gift of $50,000 exceeds the $18,000 annual exclusion, the taxpayer is required to file Form 709, United States Gift, and Generation Skipping Transfer Tax Return. The taxable portion of the gift, $50,000 minus $18,000 equals $32,000, will be applied against the taxpayer's lifetime gift and estate tax exemption. So it is unlikely any tax will actually be due, but the return must be filed. Question 67. A taxpayer lives in an area that was declared a federal disaster area by the president. What is a potential form of tax relief that may be available to them? Option A. A permanent exemption from paying federal income tax. Option B. The ability to deduct the disaster loss without itemizing. Option C. Postponement of certain tax filing and payment deadlines. Option D. A doubling of their standard deduction. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. When the president declares a federal disaster area, the IRS can postpone certain tax filing and tax payment deadlines for taxpayers who reside or have a business in the disaster area. This gives taxpayers extra time to handle their tax affairs without incurring penalties. Taxpayers in these areas may also be able to claim a casualty loss deduction for property damaged in the disaster, but this is generally an itemized deduction. Question 68. The income of a trust is taxed to either the trust itself or to the beneficiaries. What document is issued by the trust to the beneficiaries to report the income they must include on their personal tax returns? Option A, Form W-2. Option B, Form 1099 DIV. Option C, Schedule K-1, Form 10-41. Option D, Form 1098. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. When a trust distributes income to its beneficiaries, it passes the tax liability for that income along with it. The trust reports these distributions on its Form 1041, and it provides each beneficiary with a Schedule K-1. The Schedule K-1 details the beneficiary's share of the trust's income, deductions, and credits, which the beneficiary then reports on their own Form 1040. Topic: Business Entities and Considerations. Question 69. What is the primary advantage of operating a business as a sole proprietorship? Option A. It provides limited liability protection to the owner. Option B. It is easy to set up and has minimal administrative burden. Option C. The business's income is taxed at the corporate tax rate. Option D. It can have multiple owners. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. A sole proprietorship is the simplest business structure. It is not a separate legal entity from its owner, which means there is no formal action required to form one. The owner simply starts conducting business. The income and expenses are reported on the owner's personal tax return via Schedule C, making the administrative and tax filing requirements straightforward. Its major disadvantage is the lack of liability protection, as the owner is personally responsible for all business debts. Question 70. A partnership is a pass-through entity. What does this mean for tax purposes? Option A. The partnership pays tax on its profits at the entity level. Option B. The partnership's profits and losses are passed through to the partners to be reported on their personal tax returns. Option C. The partnership is exempt from all federal taxes. Option D. The partners are considered employees of the partnership. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. A pass-through entity, such as a partnership, LLC, or S corporation, does not pay income tax at the entity level. Instead, the entity's income, losses, deductions, and credits are passed through to the owners, partners, members, or shareholders. The owners then report these items on their personal income tax returns and pay the tax at their individual income tax rates. The partnership itself files an informational return, Form 1065, to report its activity to the IRS. Question 71. What is a key requirement for a corporation to be eligible to elect S-corporation status? Option A. It can have no more than 50 shareholders. Option B. It can have different classes of stock, such as common and preferred. Option C. Its shareholders must be U.S., citizens, or resident aliens. Option D. It must be a publicly traded company. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. To qualify for S-corporation status, a corporation must meet several strict requirements. One of these is that all shareholders must be individuals, certain trusts, or estates, and they must be U.S., citizens, or resident aliens. Non-resident aliens cannot be shareholders. Other requirements include having no more than 100 shareholders and having only one class of stock. Question 72. The at-risk rules limit a taxpayer's deductible losses from a business or investment activity to what amount? Option A, the total amount of income from the activity. Option B, the amount the taxpayer has personally invested in the activity and is personally liable for. Option C, 50% of the taxpayer's investment. Option D, the fair market value of the business assets. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The at-risk rules prevent taxpayers from deducting losses in excess of the amount they actually stand to lose from an activity. This at-risk amount generally includes the money and the adjusted basis of property the taxpayer contributed to the activity, plus amounts the taxpayer borrowed for use in the activity for which they are personally liable. This prevents taxpayers from using non-recourse debt, debt for which they are not personally liable, to generate tax losses greater than their economic risk. Question 73. A taxpayer engages in an activity that the IRS determines is a hobby, not a for-profit business. How are the expenses related to this hobby treated for tax purposes? Option A. All expenses are fully deductible against any other income. Option B. Expenses are deductible up to the amount of income generated by the hobby, but only as an itemized deduction, which is currently suspended. Option C. A net loss from the hobby can be used to offset wages. Option D. The income is not taxable, so the expenses are irrelevant. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. If an activity is classified as a hobby, the taxpayer must report any income earned from it. However, the rules for deducting expenses are very restrictive. Hobby expenses are deductible only up to the amount of hobby income. Furthermore, these expenses were previously claimed as a miscellaneous itemized deduction subject to the 2% of AGI floor. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act suspended miscellaneous itemized deductions, so currently, no hobby expenses are deductible, while all hobby income is taxable. Question 74. What is the primary characteristic of a C corporation that distinguishes it from pass-through entities like S corporations and partnerships? Option A. It provides limited liability to its owners. Option B. It is taxed as a separate entity from its owners, leading to potential double taxation. Option C. It is managed by a board of directors. Option D. It can only have one class of stock. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. A C corporation is a distinct legal and taxable entity separate from its owners, shareholders. It files its own tax return, Form 1120, and pays tax on its profits at the corporate level. If the corporation then distributes its after-tax profits to shareholders as dividends, the shareholders must pay tax on those dividends on their personal returns. This creates two layers of tax, once at the corporate level and again at the shareholder level, which is known as double taxation. This is the key tax difference from pass-through entities. Topic: Business tax preparation. Question 75. For a manufacturing business, what is the correct formula for calculating the cost of goods sold, or COGS? Option A, beginning inventory plus purchases minus ending inventory. Option B, gross receipts minus returns and allowances. Option C, purchases plus ending inventory minus beginning inventory. Option D, gross sales minus total expenses. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Cost of goods sold is the direct cost of producing the goods sold by a company. The standard formula is to take the value of the inventory at the beginning of the year, add the cost of purchases and other costs to make or acquire inventory during the year, and then subtract the value of the inventory left at the end of the year. The result is the cost attributable to the goods that were actually sold during the year. Question 76. Section 179 of the tax code allows a business to do what? Option A, defer paying income tax until the following year. Option B, expense, the full cost of certain qualifying property in the year it is placed in service, instead of depreciating it over time. Option C, claim a tax credit equal to the cost of new equipment. Option D, exclude a portion of its gross receipts from income. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The Section 179 deduction allows a business to treat the cost of qualifying property as an expense rather than a capital expenditure. This means the business can deduct the full purchase price of the equipment from its gross income in the year it is placed in service. This is an incentive for businesses to invest in themselves by purchasing new equipment. There are annual limits on the amount that can be expensed and on the total amount of equipment purchased. Question 77. Which of the following is generally not a deductible business expense for a sole proprietorship? Option A, the cost of advertising for the business. Option B, the salary paid to a necessary employee. Option C, the cost of the owner's commute from their home to their primary place of business. Option D, the cost of business liability insurance. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. For an expense to be deductible, it must be both ordinary and necessary for the business. Advertising, employee salaries, and insurance are all common examples of deductible business expenses. However, the cost of commuting between your home and your main or regular place of work is a personal expense and is not deductible, regardless of how far you have to travel. Question 78. Bonus depreciation allows a business to do what? Option A, claim an extra 10% depreciation on all assets. Option B, deduct an additional percentage of the cost of qualifying new and used property in the year it is placed in service. Option C, receive a cash bonus from the IRS for buying new equipment. Option D, spread depreciation over a longer period than the normal recovery period. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Bonus depreciation is an additional first-year depreciation deduction that can be taken on qualifying business property. It is taken after any Section 179 deduction, but before the regular MACRS depreciation. The percentage allowed for bonus depreciation has varied over the years and is currently being phased down. For example, it was 100% for property placed in service before 2023, and it is 80% for 2023 and 60% for 2024. Unlike Section 179, bonus depreciation is not limited by business income. Question 79. A business has gross receipts of $500,000, cost of goods sold of $200,000, and other allowable deductions of $100,000. What is the business's net profit or loss? Option A, $500,000 profit. Option B, $300,000 profit. Option C, $200,000 profit. Option D, $400,000 profit. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The calculation for net profit is straightforward. First, you determine the gross profit by subtracting the cost of goods sold from the gross receipts. So, $500,000 minus $200,000 equals a gross profit of $300,000. Then, you subtract the other allowable business deductions from the gross profit. So, $300,000 minus $100,000 equals a net profit of $200,000. This is the amount that will be subject to income tax or self-employment tax. Question 80. A business must generally issue a Form 1099, NEC, non-employee compensation, to an independent contractor under what circumstance? Option A. When the business pays the contractor $600 or more during the year for services. Option B. Every time the business pays an independent contractor, regardless of the amount. Option C. Only if the independent contractor is a corporation. Option D. When the business pays the contractor $1,000 or more during the year. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. A business is required to file Form 1099 NEC for each person to whom it has paid at least $600 during the year for services performed in the course of the trade or business by someone who is not an employee. This requirement generally applies to payments to individuals, partnerships, and LLCs. Payments to C corporations and S corporations are typically exempt from this reporting requirement. Question 81. A C corporation has a net operating loss, or NOL, of $50,000 in the current year. How can this NOL be used? Option A. It can be carried back 5 years to generate an immediate refund. Option B. It can be carried forward indefinitely to offset future taxable income, but the deduction is limited to 80% of taxable income in the carry-forward year. Option C. It can be passed through to the shareholders to deduct on their personal returns. Option D. The NOL is lost and provides no tax benefit. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. For net operating losses arising in tax years beginning after 2020, the rules have changed. NOLs can no longer be carried back to prior years, with some exceptions for farming and insurance companies. Instead, they can be carried forward indefinitely. However, the NOL deduction in any given future year is limited to 80% of the taxable income for that year. Calculated before the NOL deduction, NOLs cannot be passed through to C Corporation shareholders. Topic: Specialized Returns and Taxpayers. Question 82. Which schedule is used by farmers to report their income and expenses from their farming business? Option A, Schedule C, Profit or Loss from Business. Option B, Schedule E, Supplemental Income and Loss. Option C, Schedule F, Profit or Loss from Farming. Option D, Schedule D, Capital Gains and Losses. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Schedule F is specifically designed for farmers to report their business activities. It is similar in concept to Schedule C, but it is tailored to the unique income and expense categories associated with farming operations, such as sales of livestock, produce, grains, and other products raised on the farm, as well as expenses for items like seeds, fertilizer, and feed. Question 83. An organization wants to be recognized as exempt from federal income tax under Section 501(c)(3). What is the primary purpose of such an organization? Option A, to operate for the personal profit of its founders. Option B, to engage in political campaigning for public office. Option C, to operate exclusively for religious, charitable, scientific, or educational purposes. Option D, to provide financial services to its members. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. To qualify for tax-exempt status under Section 501(c)(3), an organization must be organized and operated exclusively for one or more exempt purposes. These purposes include charitable, religious, educational, scientific, literary, testing for public safety, fostering national or international amateur sports competition, or preventing cruelty to children or animals. They are strictly prohibited from allowing any net earnings to benefit a private shareholder or individual, and from participating in political campaigns. Question 84. A U.S. person who has a financial interest in or signature authority over foreign financial accounts must file an FBAR if the aggregate value of the accounts exceeds what threshold at any time during the year. Option A, $1,000. Option B, $10,000. Option C, $50,000. Option D, $100,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The reporting threshold for the report of foreign bank and financial accounts, or FBAR, FinCEN Form 114, is triggered when the aggregate value of all foreign financial accounts exceeds $10,000 at any point during the calendar year. It is important to note that this is an aggregate value, so if a person has three accounts with balances of $4,000 each, the total of $12,000 exceeds the threshold, and an FBAR must be filed. Question 85. A business operates in three different states. What tax concept determines which states have the right to tax the business's income? Option A, the Commerce Clause. Option B, the Principle of Nexus. Option C, the Safe Harbor Rule. Option D, the At-Risk Rules. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Nexus is a legal term for a connection or link. In state taxation, a business must have a certain level of connection, or nexus, with a state before that state can impose taxes on it. Nexus can be created by having a physical presence in the state, such as an office, warehouse, or employees. In recent years, the concept has expanded to include economic nexus, which can be triggered by having a certain level of sales or transactions within a state, even without a physical presence. Topic: Practices and Procedures. Question 86. Circular 230 governs the practice of enrolled agents, CPAs, attorneys, and other tax professionals before the IRS. What is one of the primary duties it imposes on these practitioners? Option A, the duty to guarantee a refund for the client. Option B, the duty to exercise due diligence in preparing returns and representing clients. Option C, the duty to charge a contingent fee for all services. Option D, the duty to report any taxpayer who makes a small error on their return. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Due diligence is a cornerstone of practice under Circular 230. It requires practitioners to be thorough and careful in their work. This includes making reasonable inquiries if information furnished by the client appears to be incorrect, inconsistent, or incomplete, and ensuring the accuracy of submissions to the IRS. Circular 230 generally prohibits guaranteeing refunds and places strict limits on the use of contingent fees. Question 87. Under Circular 230, what is a practitioner's responsibility upon discovering an error on a client's previously filed tax return? Option A, to immediately inform the IRS of the error. Option B, to terminate the relationship with the client. Option C, to advise the client promptly of the error and its potential consequences. Option D, to correct the error by filing an amended return without the client's knowledge. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Section 10 to 21 of Circular 230 is clear on this point. The practitioner must inform the client of the non-compliance, error, or omission, and advise them of the consequences under the law. The practitioner is not required to notify the IRS and, in fact, cannot do so without the client's permission due to confidentiality rules. The decision of whether to file an amended return rests with the client, not the practitioner. Question 88. An enrolled agent is found to have engaged in disreputable conduct as defined by Circular 230. What is a potential sanction that the IRS Office of Professional Responsibility can impose? Option A, a private reprimand. Option B, a monetary penalty. Option C, suspension or disbarment from practice before the IRS. Option D, all of the above. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. The Office of Professional Responsibility has a range of sanctions it can impose on practitioners who violate the standards of Circular 230. These can range from a private censure or reprimand for minor infractions to monetary penalties, and up to the most severe sanctions of suspension or permanent disbarment from representing taxpayers before the IRS. The severity of the sanction depends on the nature of the misconduct. Question 89. All paid tax return preparers are required to have a preparer tax identification number, or PTIN. How often must a PTIN be renewed? Option A, every 3 years, option B, it never expires, option C, annually, between October 16th and December 31st, option D, only when the preparer changes their business address. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. PTINs are valid for one calendar year, from January 1st through December 31st. All PTIN holders must renew their number annually to be authorized to prepare federal tax returns for compensation in the upcoming year. The renewal season typically opens in mid-October and runs through the end of the year. Topic: Representation before the IRS. Question 90. A taxpayer wants to authorize an enrolled agent to represent them in a matter before the IRS, including the ability to receive confidential information and advocate on their behalf. What form should be used to grant this authority? Option A, Form 8821, Tax Information Authorization. Option B, Form 22848, Power of Attorney and Declaration of Representative. Option C, Form 4506T, Request for Transcript of Tax Return. Option D, Form W-4, Employees Withholding Certificate. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Form 2848 is used to grant a qualified individual comprehensive authority to represent a taxpayer before the IRS. This includes the power to perform any and all acts the taxpayer can perform, such as signing agreements and consents. By contrast, Form 8821 only authorizes the designated individual to inspect and/or receive confidential tax information. It does not grant the authority to represent the taxpayer. Question 91. What is the primary function of the IRS Independent Office of Appeals? Option A, to conduct criminal investigations of tax fraud. Option B, to resolve tax controversies without litigation, on a basis that is fair and impartial to both the government and the taxpayer. Option C, to process tax returns and issue refunds. Option D, to audit high-income taxpayers. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The mission of IRS appeals is to resolve tax disputes fairly and impartially. It is an independent body within the IRS where taxpayers can have their case heard if they disagree with the findings of an IRS audit or other action. The goal of an appeals conference is to reach a settlement that avoids the time and expense of going to tax court. Appeals officers have the authority to consider the hazards of litigation when negotiating a settlement. Question 92. A taxpayer owes a significant amount of back taxes and cannot pay the full amount immediately. Which of the following is a collection alternative that the IRS might grant, allowing the taxpayer to pay the liability over time? Option A, an offer in compromise. Option B, an installment agreement. Option C, currently not collectible status. Option D, all of the above. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. The IRS has several options for taxpayers who cannot pay their tax debt in full. An installment agreement, option B, allows for monthly payments over a period of time. An offer in compromise, option A, allows a taxpayer to settle their tax debt for less than the full amount owed, typically due to doubt as to collectability. Currently not collectible status, option C, is a temporary suspension of collection activity for taxpayers experiencing severe economic hardship. All are potential collection alternatives. Question 93. The attorney-client privilege protects confidential communications between a client and their attorney under Section 7525 of the Internal Revenue Code. This privilege is extended to certain communications between a taxpayer and whom, option A, any paid tax return preparer, option B, a federally authorized tax practitioner, such as an enrolled agent or CPA, option C, an IRS revenue agent, option D, a family member. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Section 7525 provides a limited confidentiality privilege for tax advice given by a federally authorized tax practitioner, which includes enrolled agents, CPAs, and attorneys, to their client. This privilege is similar to the attorney-client privilege, but is limited to tax advice in non-criminal tax matters before the IRS or in federal court. It does not apply to criminal tax matters or to communications related to the preparation of a tax return. Topic: Specific areas of representation. Question 94. Which type of IRS audit is generally the most comprehensive and is conducted at the taxpayer's home or place of business? Option A, a correspondence audit. Option B, an office audit. Option C, a field audit. Option D, a compliance check. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. A field audit is the most extensive type of IRS examination. It is conducted by a revenue agent at the taxpayer's location rather than at an IRS office. This type of audit is typically used for more complex returns, such as those for large businesses, and it involves a thorough review of the taxpayer's books and records. A correspondence audit is handled by mail, and an office audit requires the taxpayer to come to an IRS office. Question 95. A taxpayer is assessed a penalty for failing to file a return on time. They can demonstrate that a sudden, serious illness prevented them from filing. What type of relief should they request from the IRS? Option A, innocent spouse relief. Option B, an offer in compromise. Option C, penalty abatement based on reasonable cause. Option D, a private letter ruling. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. When a taxpayer can show that they failed to meet their tax obligations for reasons beyond their control, despite exercising ordinary business care and prudence, they can request that the associated penalties be abated for reasonable cause. A severe illness that incapacitates the taxpayer is a classic example of a situation that may constitute reasonable cause. Innocent spouse. Relief applies to joint returns, and an offer in compromise relates to the inability to pay the tax itself, not the penalty. Question 96. The Trust Fund Recovery Penalty, or TFRP, can be assessed against whom? Option A. Any employee of a business that fails to pay its income taxes. Option B. A responsible person who willfully fails to collect or pay over trust fund taxes, such as payroll taxes. Option C, the shareholders of a corporation that goes bankrupt. Option D, the customers of a business that fails to remit sales tax. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Trust fund taxes are amounts that employers withhold from employees' paychecks, such as federal income tax and FICA taxes. These funds are held in trust for the government. The TFRP is a powerful collection tool that allows the IRS to assess the unpaid trust fund taxes personally against any individual who was responsible for collecting and paying the taxes and who willfully failed to do so. This can include corporate officers, directors, or even bookkeepers. Question 97. A taxpayer filed a joint return with their spouse, who intentionally understated the tax due by omitting income without the taxpayer's knowledge. The taxpayer is now facing a large tax bill from the IRS. What form of relief might be available? Option A, penalty abatement. Option B, an installment agreement. Option C, innocent spouse relief. Option D, a capital loss carryover. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Innocent spouse relief is designed to relieve a person from paying additional tax, interest, and penalties if their spouse or former spouse improperly reported items or omitted items on their joint tax return. To qualify, the taxpayer must show that they did not know and had no reason to know that there was an understatement of tax and that it would be unfair to hold them liable for it. This relief separates the liability, making the innocent spouse responsible only for their portion of the tax. Topic: Filing process and compliance. Question 98. A taxpayer discovers a significant error on the tax return they filed 2 years ago. What is the proper procedure for correcting this error? Option A, file a new Form 1040 for that year. Option B, send a letter to the IRS explaining the error. Option C, file Form 1040-X, amended, U.S., individual income tax return. Option D, wait for the IRS to discover the error and send a notice. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Form 1040-X is the specific form used to amend a previously filed Form 1040, 1040-SR, or 1040-NR. It is used to correct errors, report omitted income, or claim a deduction or credit that was not taken on the original return. A taxpayer should not file another original return for that year. While waiting for the IRS to find the error is an option, it is generally better to file an amended return proactively to correct the mistake and limit the accrual of penalties and interest. Question 99. Generally, what is the statute of limitations for the IRS to assess additional tax on a return that has been filed? Option A, 1 year from the date of filing. Option B, 3 years from the date the return was filed or the due date, whichever is later. Option C, 10 years from the date of filing. Option D, there is no statute of limitations. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The general rule for the statute of limitations on assessment is 3 years. This means the IRS has 3 years. From the later of the date the return was filed or the return's original due date to assess any additional tax. This period can be extended to 6 years if the taxpayer has substantially understated their gross income by more than 25%, and there is no statute of limitations in cases of fraud or failure to file a return. Question 100. What is the general deadline for a taxpayer to file a claim for a refund? Option A, within 1 year of paying the tax. Option B, within 10 years of the return due date. Option C, within 3 years from the time the return was filed, or 2 years from the time the tax was paid, whichever is later. Option D, a refund claim can be filed at any time. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The statute of limitations for claiming a refund is crucial. A taxpayer must generally file a claim for a credit or refund within 3 years from the date they filed their original return or within 2 years from the date they paid the tax, whichever of these periods expires later. If a claim is not filed within this time frame, the taxpayer may lose their right to the refund, even if it was legitimately overpaid. Topic: Filing process and compliance. Continued. Question 101. A taxpayer wants to file their return electronically, but is concerned about providing a signature. How is the signature requirement satisfied for an e-filed return? Option A, by mailing a signed paper copy to the IRS after e-filing. Option B, by using a self-select PIN or an IRS e-file PIN. Option C, by having the tax preparer sign on their behalf. Option D, electronic filing does not require a signature. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. For electronic filing, the IRS requires a way to verify the taxpayer's identity and intent to file. This is done through a personal identification number, or PIN, which serves as the electronic signature. The self-select PIN is created by the taxpayer using personal information, while the IRS e-file PIN can be obtained from the IRS. A paper signature is not required for e-filed returns, and a preparer cannot sign for the taxpayer. Question 102. If a taxpayer needs to amend their return to claim an additional credit that they overlooked, how long do they generally have to file Form 1040-X to claim a refund? Option A, 1 year from the original filing date. Option B, 3 years from the date the original return was filed, or 2 years from the date the tax was paid, whichever is later. Option C, indefinitely, as long as the IRS agrees. Option D, only until the end of the tax year in which the error was made. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The statute of limitations for filing an amended return to claim a refund is the same as for any refund claim. You must file within 3 years from the date you filed your original return, or within 2 years from the date you paid the tax, whichever is later. This gives taxpayers a window to correct mistakes and claim additional refunds without losing their right to do so. Question 103. What is the primary purpose of the IRS's modernized e-file, or MEF, system? Option A, to allow taxpayers to file paper returns more quickly. Option B, to provide a secure electronic transmission of tax returns to the IRS. Option C, to automatically audit all e-filed returns. Option D, to process refunds in paper check form only. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The MEF system is the IRS's platform for electronically filing tax returns. It ensures secure transmission, faster processing, and quicker acknowledgments of receipt. It also allows for electronic attachments and is used for both individual and business returns. Unlike paper filing, e-filing through MEF reduces errors and speeds up refunds. Question 104. A tax preparer is found to have engaged in a pattern of preparing returns with understated tax liabilities. What is a potential penalty they could face? Option A, a civil penalty of $1,000 per return. Option B, a penalty of $50 per failure to include their PTIN on the return. Option C, disbarment from preparing returns for others. Option D, all of the above. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. Preparers who understate a taxpayer's liability due to an unreasonable position can face a penalty of the greater of $1,000 or 50% of the income derived from the return. Failing to include a PTIN incurs a $50 penalty per return, and repeated violations can lead to injunctions or disbarment under Circular 230. These penalties are designed to ensure accuracy and compliance. Question 105. Taxpayers are required to keep records supporting items on their tax return for how long, in general? Option A, 1 year after filing. Option B, 3 years from the date of filing the return. Option C, 7 years if there is a substantial understatement of income. Option D, indefinitely for all records. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The general rule is to keep records for 3 years from the date you file your return, as this aligns with the statute of limitations for assessment. However, if income is understated by more than 25%, the period extends to 6 years, and for fraud or non-filing, there is no limit. It's always wise to keep records longer for items like property basis that may affect future returns. Question 106. What is the purpose of the IRS's Identity Protection PIN, or IP PIN, program? Option A, to allow faster processing of paper returns. Option B, to provide an additional layer of security to prevent identity theft in tax filing. Option C, to identify preparers who have a history of errors. Option D, to track estimated tax payments. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The IP PIN is a 6-digit number assigned to eligible taxpayers to help prevent the misuse of their Social Security number on fraudulent federal income tax returns. It must be entered on the tax return for it to be processed. This program is particularly useful for victims of identity theft or those at high risk, and it adds security beyond standard verification. Topic: Preliminary Work and Taxpayer Data, Continued. Question 107. When reviewing a new client's prior year return, you notice they did not report a small amount of interest income from a savings account. What should you advise the client to do? Option A, ignore it since the amount is insignificant. Option B, file an amended return to report the income and pay any additional tax. Option C, report double the amount on the current year's return to make up for it. Option D, deduct the amount as a miscellaneous expense. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. All income, no matter how small, must be reported, and failing to do so is an error that can lead to penalties if discovered by the IRS, advising the client to file Form 1040-X to correct the omission is the proper course. As it demonstrates good faith and can limit interest and penalties, ignoring it or compensating in another year is not compliant with tax laws. Question 108. A client provides you with a Form 1099-K from a payment processor for online sales, but they claim it includes non-taxable reimbursements. What is your due diligence responsibility? Option A. Accept the client's explanation without question. Option B. Ask for documentation to substantiate the non-taxable portions and verify the amounts. Option C. Report the full amount as income to be safe. Option D. Exclude the entire amount from the return. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. No, wait, that's wrong. Let me correct. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. As a preparer, you must exercise due diligence by making reasonable inquiries when information appears incorrect or incomplete. Requesting supporting documents for the claimed non-taxable portions ensures accurate reporting. Accepting without verification could lead to penalties for both you and the client if the return is inaccurate. Question 109. For a taxpayer who is a U.S. citizen but lived abroad for the entire year, what additional form might they need to file if they qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion? Option A. Form 2555, foreign earned income. Option B. Form 8938, statement of specified foreign financial assets. Option C. Form 1166, foreign tax credit. Option D. Form 4868, automatic extension. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Form 2555 is used to claim the foreign earned income exclusion and the foreign housing exclusion or deduction. It is attached to Form 1040 for qualifying taxpayers who meet the physical presence or bona fide residence tests. This can exclude up to a certain amount of foreign earned income from U.S. taxation. Question 110. During preliminary data gathering, a client mentions they received unemployment compensation. How should this be treated on their tax return? Option A. It is not taxable. Option B. It is reported as other income on Schedule 1. Option C. It is deducted as a business expense. Option D. It is reported on Schedule C. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Unemployment compensation is taxable and must be reported as income. The payer issues Form 1099-G, and the amount is entered on Schedule 1, Line 7 of Form 1040. Failing to report it can result in an IRS notice and additional tax due. Topic: Engagement. Setup, PTIN, prior year review, continued. Question 111. A tax preparer must renew their PTIN annually, but what additional requirement applies to enrolled agents for maintaining their status? Option A, completing 72 hours of continuing education every 3 years. Option B, passing an annual exam. Option C, paying a monthly fee to the IRS. Option D, filing at least 100 tax returns per year. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Enrolled agents must complete a minimum of 72 hours of qualified continuing education every 3 years, with at least 16 hours per year, including 2 hours of ethics. This is in addition to renewing their PTIN to ensure they stay current with tax laws. Question 112. In an engagement letter, it is important to include a clause about what to protect the preparer. Option A. The client's promise to pay a bonus if a refund is received. Option B. The scope of services and that the preparer relies on information provided by the client. Option C. A guarantee of audit protection. Option D. The preparer's right to share client data with third parties. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The engagement letter should clearly define the services to be provided and state that the preparer is relying on the accuracy and completeness of the information supplied by the client. This helps protect the preparer from liability if the client provides incorrect data. Question 113. During a prior year review, you find that the client overpaid their tax due to a miscalculated deduction. What action should you take? Option A. Advise filing an amended return to claim a refund. Option B. Adjust the current year's return to compensate. Option C. Ignore it if the statute of limitations has expired. Option D. Report it to the IRS immediately. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. If the error resulted in an overpayment, advising the client to file Form 1040-X within the refund claim period allows them to recover the overpaid tax. Adjusting the current year is not allowed, as each year stands on its own. Question 114. What is the consequence if a paid preparer fails to sign the tax return they prepared? Option A. The return is invalid and must be refiled. Option B. The preparer may be subject to a $50 penalty per return. Option C. The taxpayer is liable for the penalty. Option D. No consequence, as signatures are optional. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Paid preparers must sign the returns they prepare and include their PTIN. Failure to do so can result in a $50 penalty per return, up to $27,000 for 2024. This ensures accountability and compliance. Topic: Filing status, due dates and extensions. Continued. Question 115. A surviving spouse with a dependent child can file as qualifying surviving spouse for how many years after their spouse's death? Option A, 1 year. Option B, 2 years. Option C, 5 years. Option D, indefinitely. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The qualifying surviving spouse status allows the taxpayer to use the married filing jointly tax rates and standard deduction for 2 years following the year of the spouse's death, provided they have a dependent child and do not remarry. This provides tax relief during a difficult time. Question 116. If April 15th falls on a weekend or holiday, what happens to the tax return due date? Option A. It is moved to the previous business day. Option B. It is extended to the next business day. Option C. It remains April 15th. Option D. It is extended by 1 week. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. When the due date falls on a Saturday, Sunday, or legal holiday, the deadline is automatically extended to the next business day. This applies to filing returns and making payments without penalty. Question 117. A taxpayer in a federally declared disaster area receives an automatic extension for filing and paying taxes. How long is this extension typically? Option A, 30 days. Option B, 60 days. Option C, it varies based on the IRS announcement for the specific disaster. Option D, 1 year. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The length of the extension depends on the severity of the disaster and is specified in the IRS's disaster relief announcement. It can range from a few months to longer, and it postpones various tax deadlines. Question 118. What filing status provides the highest standard deduction for an unmarried taxpayer who maintains a home for a qualifying dependent? Option A, single. Option B, married filing separately. Option C, head of household. Option D, qualifying surviving spouse. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Head of household offers a higher standard deduction than single or married filing separately, and it is available to unmarried taxpayers who pay more than half the cost of keeping up a home for a qualifying person, such as a child or dependent parent. Topic: Identity. Verification, ACA and foreign asset checks. Continued. Question 119. A taxpayer did not have health insurance for part of the year, but they qualify for an exemption. How do they report this on their return? Option A. They ignore it, as exemptions are automatic. Option B. They file Form 8965, health coverage exemptions. Option C. They pay the shared responsibility payment anyway. Option D. They report it on Schedule 3. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Although the shared responsibility payment was reduced to zero starting in 2019, for prior years, taxpayers claimed exemptions using Form 8965 to avoid the penalty. Understanding this is important for amended returns or audits. Question 120. For Form 8938, what is the filing threshold for a single taxpayer living in the U.S.? Option A. Foreign assets exceeding $10,000 at any time. Option B, foreign assets exceeding $50,000 on the last day of the year or $75,000 at any time. Option C, foreign assets exceeding $200,000. Option D, no threshold for single taxpayers. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Form 8938 must be filed if the total value of specified foreign financial assets exceeds $50,000 on the last day of the tax year or $75,000 at any time during the year for unmarried taxpayers living in the U.S. This is separate from FBR reporting. Question 121. What document is typically used for identity verification when a client does not have a Social Security card? Option A, a birth certificate. Option B, a passport or state-issued ID. Option C, a utility bill. Option D, a credit card statement. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Acceptable identity documents include a passport, driver's license, or other government-issued photo ID. These are required for e-filing and to meet due diligence standards. A birth certificate alone may not suffice without photo ID. Question 122. A taxpayer receives a notice that their return was rejected due to a name SSSN mismatch. What should they do? Option A. Refile with a different name. Option B. Contact the Social Security Administration to verify and correct records. Option C. Ignore the notice. Option D. File a paper return instead. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Mismatches often occur due to name changes or errors in SSA records. The taxpayer should obtain a corrected Social Security card or verification from the SSA before refiling to ensure acceptance. Topic: Income and Assets. Continued. Question 123. A taxpayer receives royalty income from oil and gas leases. How is this typically reported? Option A, on Schedule C, as business income. Option B, on Schedule E as rental and royalty income. Option C, as other income on Schedule 1. Option D, it is not taxable. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Royalties from mineral rights or intellectual property are reported on Schedule E, Part 1, along with related expenses. This allows for depletion deductions in the case of natural resources. Question 124. What is the tax treatment of life insurance proceeds received due to the death of the insured? Option A, fully taxable as ordinary income. Option B, taxable only if the policy was employer provided. Option C, generally excluded from gross income. Option D, taxable as capital gains. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Lump sum death benefits from life insurance are generally not taxable to the beneficiary. However, any interest portion included in the payout is taxable. Question 125. A taxpayer sells collectibles held for more than 1 year. What is the maximum tax rate on the gain? Option A, 15%. Option B, 20%. Option C, 28%. Option D, their ordinary income tax rate. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Gains from the sale of collectibles, such as art or stamps, are taxed at a maximum rate of 28%, even if they would otherwise qualify for lower long-term capital gains rates. This is a special rule for these assets. Question 126. Income from a canceled debt is generally taxable, but what is an exception? Option A. If the debt was for business purposes, option B. If the taxpayer is insolvent at the time of cancellation, option C. If the debt was less than $1,000, option D. If the creditor is a family member, the correct answer is option B. Explanation: cancellation of debt income can be excluded if the taxpayer was insolvent immediately before the cancellation, to the extent of their insolvency. This is reported on Form 982. Topic: basis and holding period rules. Continued. Question 127. A taxpayer receives property as part of a divorce settlement. What is their basis in the property? Option A: the fair market value at the time of transfer. Option B: the transferor's adjusted basis. Option C: zero, as it is a non-taxable event. Option D: the amount of alimony paid. The correct answer is option B. Explanation: property transfers incident to divorce are treated as gifts for basis purposes, so the recipient takes the transferor's adjusted basis. This is a carryover basis. Question 128. For stock received as a gift where the FMV is less than the donor's basis at the time of the gift, what basis is used if the recipient sells at a loss? Option A: the donor's basis. Option B: the FMV at the time of the gift. Option C: the sale price. Option D: the average of donor's basis and FMV. The correct answer is option B. Explanation: in this loss property situation, the basis for determining loss is the lower FMV at the time of the gift. While for gain, it's the donor's basis, this prevents transferring built-in losses. Question 129. What adjustment is made to the basis of property for improvements made by the owner? Option A: the basis is decreased by the cost of improvements. Option B: the basis is increased by the cost of improvements. Option C: no adjustment is made. Option D: the basis is replaced by the FMV after improvements. The correct answer is option B. Explanation: capital improvements, such as adding a room to a house, increase the adjusted basis of the property, which can reduce the gain upon sale. Question 130. The holding period for property acquired by inheritance begins on what date? Option A: the date of the decedent's purchase. Option B: the date of the decedent's death. Option C: the date the heir takes possession. Option D: 1 year after death. The correct answer is option B. Explanation: inherited property is always considered to have a long-term holding period, regardless of how long the heir actually holds it, but the period technically starts on the date of death. Topic: sales, exchanges, and other asset dispositions. Continued. Question 131. In a like-kind exchange, what happens to any boot received? Option A: it is excluded from income. Option B: it is taxed as ordinary income. Option C: it triggers recognition of gain to the extent of the boot. Option D: it reduces the basis of the new property. The correct answer is option C. Explanation: boot, which is cash or non-like-kind property received in an exchange, causes the recognition of gain up to the amount of the boot. The rest of the gain is deferred. Question 132. A taxpayer's personal residence is condemned by the government and they receive compensation. How is the gain treated if they purchase a replacement home? Option A: the gain is always taxable. Option B: the gain can be deferred if the proceeds are reinvested in similar property. Option C: there is no gain on condemned property. Option D: the gain is taxed at short-term rates. The correct answer is option B. Explanation: for involuntary conversions like condemnation, taxpayers can elect to defer the gain by reinvesting the proceeds in similar property within a specified period, similar to Section 1033 rules. Question 133. What is the wash sale rule? Option A: losses from sales of stock are disallowed if substantially identical stock is repurchased within 30 days. Option B: gains from sales are deferred if stock is repurchased. Option C: it applies only to gains, not losses. Option D: it allows double deduction of losses. The correct answer is option A. Explanation: The wash sale rule prevents taxpayers from claiming a loss on a security if they buy a substantially identical one within 30 days before or after the sale. The loss is added to the basis of the new security. Question 134. For the sale of a principal residence, what is the maximum exclusion of gain for a married couple filing jointly? Option A, $250,000. Option B, $500,000. Option C, $1,000. Option D, unlimited. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Married couples can exclude up to $500,000 of gain from the sale of their main home if they meet the ownership and use tests, provided both spouses qualify. Topic. Deductions and credits. Continued. Question 135. What is the phase-out starting point for the child tax credit for married filing jointly in 2024? Option A, $100,000, magi. Option B, $400,000, magi. Option C, $200,000, magi. Option D, no phase-out. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. For 2024, the child tax credit begins to phase out at $400,000 of modified AGI for joint filers, reducing by $50 for each $1,000 over the threshold. Question 136. A taxpayer pays points to refinance their home mortgage. How are these points deducted? Option A, fully in the year paid. Option B, ratably over the life of the loan. Option C, not deductible. Option D, as a credit. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Points paid for a refinance are generally not deductible in full in the year paid. Unlike for a purchase, they must be amortized over the loan term. Question 137. What credit is available for installing solar panels on a home? Option A, the residential clean energy credit. Option B, the energy efficient home improvement credit. Option C, both A and B depending on the installation. Option D, no credit for solar. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The residential clean energy credit provides a percentage of the cost for qualified solar electric and solar water heating property. It is non-refundable but can be carried forward. Question 138. For the QBI deduction, what is the threshold for single filers where limitations begin to apply? Option A, $182,100 taxable income. Option B, $100,000. Option C, $50,000. Option D, $250,000. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. For 2024, the threshold is $180,100 for single filers, above which the deduction for SSTBs phases out and wage capital limitations apply for all businesses. Topic: Taxation and Payments. Key Principles and Framework, Continued. Question 139. What triggers the additional Medicare tax? Option A, wages over $200,000 for single filers. Option B, investment income over $10,000. Option C, self-employment income over $125,000 for married filing separately. Option D, all of the above. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. The 0.9% additional Medicare tax applies to wages, compensation, and self-employment income above certain thresholds based on filing status. It is in addition to the regular Medicare tax. Question 140. How is the kiddie tax calculated for a child's unearned income? Option A, at the child's tax rate. Option B, at the parent's marginal tax rate. Option C, exempt up to $2,600. Option D, as a flat 10% tax. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The kiddie tax taxes a child's unearned income above a certain amount at the parent's highest marginal rate to prevent income shifting. For 2024, the first $10,600 is taxed at the child's rate, the rest at the parent's. Question 141. What is the purpose of Form 6251? Option A, to calculate self-employment tax. Option B, to compute the alternative minimum tax. Option C, to claim foreign tax credit. Option D, to report estimated payments. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Form 6251 is used to figure the amount of alternative minimum tax owed, if any, by adding back certain preference items to taxable income and applying AMT rates. Question 142. A taxpayer has both long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. How are they taxed? Option A, at ordinary income rates. Option B, at 0%, 15%, or 20% depending on income. Option C, at a flat 25% rate. Option D, exempt from tax. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Both qualified dividends and net long-term capital gains are taxed at preferential rates of 0%, 15%, or 20% based on the taxpayer's taxable income bracket. Topic: Estimated tax and withholding rules. Continued. Question 143. Who is exempt from making estimated tax payments? Option A, self-employed individuals with net earnings over $400. Option B, taxpayers whose withholding covers at least 90% of the current year's tax. Option C, all retirees. Option D, taxpayers with income under $50,000. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. If withholding and credits are expected to cover 90% of the current year's tax or 100% of the prior year's tax, no estimated payments are required. This is the safe harbor. Question 144. What form is used to calculate underpayment of estimated tax penalty? Option A, Form 2210. Option B, Form 1040-ER, ES. Option C, Form 4868. Option D, Form 2848. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Form 2210 is used to determine if there is an underpayment penalty and to compute the amount or to show qualification for a waiver. Question 145. For farmers and fishermen, what is the special rule for estimated tax payments? Option A, they must pay in 4 quarterly installments. Option B, they can make one payment by January 15th. Option C, they are exempt from estimated taxes. Option D, they pay monthly. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Farmers and fishermen with at least 2/3 of their gross income from farming or fishing can make a single estimated tax payment by January 15th or file their return by March 1st to avoid penalties. Question 146. If a taxpayer overwithholds from their paycheck, what happens? Option A, they forfeit the excess. Option B, they receive a refund when filing their return. Option C, it is carried forward indefinitely. Option D, it triggers a penalty. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Overwithholding results in a refund of the excess when the tax return is filed, as it is essentially an interest-free loan to the government. Topic: Penalties, Interest and Safe Harbor Provisions. Continued. Question 147. What is the accuracy-related penalty rate for negligence or disregard of rules? Option A, 5% of the underpayment. Option B, 20% of the underpayment. Option C, 75% for fraud. Option D, both B and C, depending on the violation. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. The accuracy-related penalty is 20% for negligence or substantial understatement, while fraud incurs a 75% penalty. These encourage accurate reporting. Question 148. Interest on unpaid taxes accrues from what date? Option A, the date the return is filed. Option B, the due date of the return. Option C, 30 days after a notice is sent. Option D, the end of the tax year. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Interest begins accruing from the original due date of the return, without regard to extensions, and continues until the tax is paid in full. Question 149. A taxpayer can avoid the failure to deposit penalty for payroll taxes by meeting what condition? Option A, depositing within 10 days of payday. Option B, using the safe harbor of depositing 100% of the prior quarter's liability. Option C, filing Form 941 annually. Option D, paying employees in cash. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. For certain small employers, depositing based on a look-back period's liability can provide a safe harbor against penalties if there is a shortfall, provided it is corrected timely. Question 150. What is the penalty for filing a frivolous tax return? Option A, $500. Option B, $5,000. Option C, 10% of the tax due. Option D, no penalty for first offense. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The IRS can impose a $5,000 penalty for filing a return based on a frivolous position, such as claiming taxes are unconstitutional, to deter such filings. Topic. Advising the individual taxpayer. Continued. Question 151. A taxpayer is considering a Roth IRA conversion. What is the tax impact? Option A. No tax on the conversion. Option B. The converted amount is taxed as ordinary income in the year of conversion. Option C. Taxed at capital gains rates. Option D. Deferred until withdrawal. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Converting from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA triggers income tax on the pre-tax amount converted in that year, but future qualified withdrawals are tax-free. Question 152. For year-end tax planning, what strategy involves deferring income? Option A, accelerating deductions into the current year. Option B, delaying receipt of a bonus until January. Option C, selling assets for a gain now. Option D, prepaying next year's expenses. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Deferring income to the next year can lower the current year's tax liability, especially if the taxpayer expects to be in a lower bracket next year. Question 153. A taxpayer with a home office. What test must be met for the deduction? Option A. The office must be used regularly and exclusively for business. Option B. It must be larger than 500 square feet. Option C. It must be a separate structure. Option D. Only for self-employed. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The space must be used regularly and exclusively as the principal place of business or for meeting clients. Employees can also qualify under certain conditions. Question 154. What advice would you give a taxpayer facing a large capital gain? Option A. Consider installment sales to spread the gain. Option B. Sell immediately to lock in rates. Option C. Gift the asset to avoid tax. Option D. Borrow against it instead. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. An installment sale allows the gain to be reported as payments are received, potentially keeping the taxpayer in a lower tax bracket each year. Topic. Specialized returns for individuals. Continued. Question 155. For Form 1041, when is the return due for a calendar year estate? Option A, April 15th. Option B, the 15th day of the fourth month after the end of the tax year. Option C, June 15th. Option D, October 15th. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. For calendar year filers, this is April 15th, but estates can elect a fiscal year, affecting the due date. Question 156. Gift tax applies to transfers of property for less than full value, but what is excluded? Option A, gifts to spouses, if U.S. citizens. Option B, gifts over $18,000 per year. Option C, all gifts to charities. Option D, both A and C. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. There is an unlimited marital deduction for gifts to U.S. citizen spouses, and gifts to qualified charities are not subject to gift tax. Question 157. What is Form 3520 used for? Option A, reporting foreign gifts or bequests over $100,000. Option B, claiming foreign tax credit. Option C, reporting domestic trusts. Option D, filing for extensions. The correct answer is option A. Explanation, U.S. Persons must report large gifts from foreign individuals or estates on Form 3520 to prevent tax evasion. Question 158. For disaster relief, what form is used to claim a casualty loss? Option A, Form 4684. Option B, Form 1040X if amending. Option C, both. Option D, no form needed. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Form 4684 is used to calculate the deductible loss, and if claiming for a prior year, an amended return is filed. Topic. Business entities and considerations. Continued. Question 159. What is a disadvantage of an LLC taxed as a partnership? Option A, unlimited liability. Option B, self-employment tax on all income. Option C, double taxation. Option D, limited to 100 members. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Members are subject to self-employment tax on their share of ordinary income, unlike S-Corp shareholders who can take salary and distributions. Question 160. For S-corporations, what happens if the election is terminated? Option A, it can be re-elected immediately. Option B, must wait 5 years to re-elect. Option C, becomes a C-corp. Option D, both B and C. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. Termination results in C-corp status, and generally, S status cannot be re-elected for 5 years without IRS consent. Question 161. The hobby loss rules apply when an activity lacks what? Option A, a profit motive. Option B, employees. Option C, a business license. Option D, inventory. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. If there is no intent to profit, losses cannot offset other income, and expenses are limited to income. Question 162. What is required for a business to be considered a qualified joint venture? Option A, spouses filing jointly and both materially participating. Option B, at least three owners. Option C, corporate status. Option D, foreign operations. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Spouses can elect to be treated as a qualified joint venture, filing two Schedule C's instead of a partnership return. Topic. Business tax preparation. Continued. Question 163. What inventory method is generally required for tax purposes if inventory is material? Option A, FIFO. Option B, LIFO. Option C, the method used for financial accounting. Option D, specific identification. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Taxpayers must use the same inventory method for tax and financial reporting unless they get IRS permission to change. Question 164. For depreciation, what is the recovery period for residential rental property? Option A, 5 years. Option B, 27,005 years. Option C, 39 years. Option D, 15 years. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Under MACRS, residential rental buildings are depreciated over 27,005 years using the straight-line method. Question 165. A business credit for research activities is claimed on what form? Option A, Form 6765. Option B, Form 3800. Option C, both, as Form 6765 computes it, and 3800 reports general business credits. Option D, Schedule C directly. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The research credit is calculated on Form 6765 and then carried to Form 3800 for the total general business credit. Question 166. Net operating losses for businesses can be carried forward. How long? Option A, 5 years. Option B, 20 years. Option C, indefinitely. Option D, only, back 2 years. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Post-2017 NOLs can be carried forward indefinitely, but are limited to 80% of taxable income in the carry-forward year. Topic. Specialized returns and taxpayers. Continued. Question 167. For exempt organizations, what form is filed by most 501c3 entities? Option A, Form 990. Option B, Form 141. Option C, Form 1120. Option D, Form 1065. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Form 990 or its variants, 990EZ, 990N, are used by tax-exempt organizations to report activities, finances, and governance to the IRS. Question 168. FBR is filed with what agency? Option A, IRS. Option B, FinCEN. Option C, SSA. Option D, State Tax Authority. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, receives FBAR filings electronically, separate from tax returns. Question 169. For multi-state taxation, what is apportionment? Option A. Dividing income based on factors like sales, property, payroll. Option B. Taxing all income in the home state. Option C. Exempting out-of-state income. Option D. Filing separate returns in each state. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Apportionment allocates a business's income among states where it has nexus, using formulas to determine each state's share. Question 170. Retirement plans like 401ks report contributions and distributions on what form? Option A, Form 5498 for contributions, Form 1099-R for distributions, Option B, Form W-2, Option C, Schedule K-1, Option D, Form 1040 directly. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Plan administrators issue Form 5498 for IRA contributions and Form 1099-R for distributions, which taxpayers use to report on their returns. Topic. Practices and procedures. Continued. Question 171. Circular 230 requires practitioners to retain records for how long? Option A, 3 years. Option B, 4 years from the date of filing. Option C, indefinitely. Option D, until the client requests destruction. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Section 10.28 requires keeping copies of returns or claims for refund for 4 years after preparation or representation. Question 172. What is a prohibited practice under Circular 230? Option A, charging fees based on a percentage of refund. Option B, providing free consultations. Option C, advertising services. Option D, representing family members. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Contingent fees are generally prohibited for preparing original returns, as they may encourage improper positions, but are allowed in certain audit situations. Question 173. Due diligence for the EITC requires completing what form? Option A, Form 8867. Option B, Form 2D848. Option C, Form 1040. Option D, no specific form. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Preparers must complete Form 8867, Paid Preparers Due Diligence Checklist, to verify eligibility for EITC, AOTC, and CTC. Question 174. PTIN renewal requires what? Option A, paying a fee and providing current information. Option B, passing a test. Option C, submitting client references. Option D, attending a seminar. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Renewal involves updating personal information and paying the fee through the IRS PTIN system annually. Topic. Representation before the IRS. Continued. Question 175. Form 8821 authorizes what? Option A. Representation in audits. Option B. Receipt of tax information only, without representation rights. Option C. Filing returns. Option D. Receiving refunds. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Unlike Form 2848, Form 8821 allows a designee to receive confidential tax information, but not to advocate or bind the taxpayer. Question 176. In an appeals conference, what can the appeals officer consider? Option A. Only the original audit findings. Option B. New information and hazards of litigation. Option C. Criminal charges. Option D. State tax issues. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Appeals can consider new evidence and the risks if the case goes to court, aiming for a fair settlement. Question 177. For collection due process hearings, what form is used to request one? Option A, Form 12153. Option B, Form 433A. Option C, Form 656. Option D, Form 2848. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Form 12153 is used to request a CDP hearing to appeal a lien or levy action by the IRS. Question 178. Client confidentiality under Section 7216 prohibits disclosure without consent, except in what case? Option A, to marketing firms. Option B, in response to a valid subpoena. Option C, to family members. Option D, for personal use. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Disclosure is allowed if required by law, such as a court order, but generally requires written consent for other uses. Topic. Specific areas of representation. Continued. Question 179. In a correspondence audit, how does the taxpayer respond? Option A. By attending an in-person meeting. Option B. By mailing documentation to support their position. Option C. By ignoring it if they disagree. Option D. By filing an amended return automatically. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Correspondence audits are handled through the mail, requiring the taxpayer to provide supporting documents to substantiate items questioned by the IRS. Question 180. For trust fund recovery penalty interviews, what right does the responsible person have? Option A, to remain silent. Option B, to have representation. Option C, both A and B. Option D, no rights, as it is civil. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Although civil, individuals can invoke rights against self-incrimination and have an attorney or EA present during TFRP interviews. Question 181. Offshore voluntary disclosure program is for taxpayers with what? Option A, domestic unreported income. Option B, willful failure to report foreign accounts or income. Option C, minor filing errors. Option D, state tax issues. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The OVDP allows taxpayers to come forward, pay taxes and penalties, and avoid criminal prosecution for offshore non-compliance. Question 182. Innocent spouse relief requires proving what? Option A. The spouse was aware of the error. Option B. Lack of knowledge, and that it would be inequitable to hold them liable. Option C, financial hardship only. Option D, divorce is finalized. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. The requesting spouse must show they didn't know or have reason to know of the understatement, and holding them liable would be unfair. Topic: filing process and compliance. Continued. Question 183. For electronic signatures, what is an acceptable method? Option A, a scanned handwritten signature. Option B, typing the name in a signature font. Option C, using a digital certificate or PIN. Option D, verbal approval over the phone. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The IRS accepts electronic signatures using secure methods like digital certificates or PINs for certain forms, ensuring authenticity. Question 184. The statute of limitations for refund claims can be extended by what? Option A, filing form 4868. Option B, signing form 872. Consent to extend the time to assess tax. Option C, paying additional tax. Option D, amending multiple times. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Form 872 extends the assessment period, which also extends the time to claim refunds related to that period. Question 185. Preparers must implement what to protect client data. Option A, firewalls and antivirus software. Option B, written security plans. Option C, employee training on data protection. Option D, all of the above. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. IRS publication 4557 requires safeguards like security plans, technology, and training to prevent identity theft and data breaches. Question 186. What is the penalty for failing to provide a correct TIN on an information return? Option A, $50 per return. Option B, $290 per return for intentional disregard. Option C, both depending on the circumstances. Option D, no penalty if corrected timely. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Penalties range from $50 for failures not due to intentional disregard up to $290 if intentional, with higher amounts for large filers. Question 187. Taxpayers should retain employment tax records for how long? Option A, 3 years. Option B, 4 years. Option C, 7 years. Option D, 10 years. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Employment tax records must be kept for at least 4 years after the due date of the tax or payment, whichever is later. Question 188. What is required for e-filing a return with a balance due? Option A, paying electronically at the time of filing. Option B, mailing a check separately. Option C, either, but electronic payment is encouraged. Option D, balance due returns cannot be e-filed. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. E-filed returns with balances due can be paid by direct debit, credit card, or check, but payment must be made by the due date to avoid penalties. Question 189. For amended returns, what supporting documents are needed? Option A, none, just the form 1040EX. Option B, explanation of changes and any new schedules. Option C, the original return copy. Option D, witness statements. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Form 1040X requires an explanation of changes and attachment of any affected schedules or forms to support the amendment. Question 190. The IRS can impose penalties on preparers for what? Option A, endorsing client refund checks. Option B, failing to provide clients with a copy of the return. Option C, not e-filing when required. Option D, all of the above. The correct answer is option D. Explanation. These are specific violations under IRC Section 6695, with penalties up to $580 per failure for not furnishing copies, and prohibitions on endorsing checks. To complete the 200 questions, here are the final ones under various topics with more depth. Question 191. Under ACA, what is Form 1095A used for? Option A, reporting employer coverage. Option B, marketplace insurance information for premium tax credit. Option C, exemptions from coverage. Option D, Medicare enrollment. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Form 1095A provides details on marketplace health coverage to reconcile advance premium tax credits on Form 8962. Question 192. For crypto transactions, what is reported on Form 8949? Option A, mining income only. Option B, sales and exchanges of virtual currency. Option C, airdrops. Option D, all crypto income. The correct answer is option B. Explanation: crypto treated as property requires reporting dispositions on Form 8949 with gains or losses calculated. Question 193. What is the standard mileage rate deduction for business use in 2024? Option A, 67 cents per mile. Option B, 14 cents per mile for charity. Option C, both depending on use. Option D, actual expenses only. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. The IRS sets annual rates, 67 cents for business, 14 for charity, and 21 for medical moving. Question 194. For AMT exemption in 2024, what is the amount for single filers? Option A, $85,700. Option B, $130,300. Option C, $609,350, phase out start. Option D, no exemption. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The AMT exemption for single is $85,700, phasing out starting at $609,350 of alternative minimum taxable income. Question 195. What safe harbor percentage for estimated taxes avoids penalty for AGI over $150,000? Option A, 90%. Option B, 100%. Option C, 110% of prior year. Option D, 80%. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. Higher income taxpayers must pay 110% of the prior year's tax or 90% of current to meet safe harbor. Question 196. Penalty abatement can be requested using what form? Option A, Form 843. Option B, Form 1040X. Option C, letter only. Option D, verbal request. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. Form 843 is used to claim a refund or request abatement of certain taxes, interest, penalties, or additions to tax. Question 197. For retirement planning, what is the 2024 contribution limit for a 401k? Option A, $23,000. Option B, $7,000 for IRA. Option C, $69,000 total for 401k. Option D, all vary. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. The elective deferral limit is $23,000, with catch-up of $7,500 for those 50-plus, and total contributions up to $69,000. Question 198. On Form 1041, what is the deduction for distributions to beneficiaries? Option A, none. Option B, the distributable net income. Option C, fixed amount. Option D, unlimited. The correct answer is option B. Explanation. Trusts deduct the lesser of the amount distributed or the distributable net income, shifting the tax burden to beneficiaries. Question 199. For business entities, what is the due date for partnership returns? Option A, March 15th. Option B, April 15th. Option C, the 15th day of the third month after year end. Option D, June 15th. The correct answer is option C. Explanation. For calendar year partnerships, this is March 15th, with extensions available. Question 200. In representation, what is the fast-track settlement program for? Option A, resolving audits quickly with appeals. Option B, filing returns faster. Option C, paying taxes in installments. Option D, criminal cases. The correct answer is option A. Explanation. FTS allows for expedited resolution of audit issues with both exam and appeals present, often within 60 days. End of practice session.